Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Good evening and welcome to Peach State Pandemonium for Thursday, June 27th, 2013. This is Michael Norris and I am joined by one of my partners, Jerry Oates. Bobby will be calling in later as he finishes up a function at the church. And Jerry just informed me that the sheriff may be calling him. I guess they've spotted another wild coyote down there on Tybee Island that you need to run and take care of.
Well, at least the sheriff isn't looking for me like Aaron Hernandez, so.
Wait a minute, I got Bobby, too. Bobby's calling in. Hey, bud, you are you driving?
Who, me?
Yeah,
I'm on the way home. I'll be home probably in 10 minutes, so I'm just thought I'd check in.
Swing through Taco Bell and pick Jerry and I up something.
Well, I've already passed Taco Bell. I had to grab Debbie a Subway, so I'm now free to go home.
There's nothing wrong with a U-turn, Bobby. A U-turn is all right.
I'm telling you.
That Hernandez thing is a mess. Especially, I was just in Rhode Island, and Boston is the closest team to Rhode Island, so that was all that was on the news.
You just can't understand. These guys, after what we did in our time and all, these guys are so blessed to be gifted to do what they do and make that kind of money. And how in the world can you get tangled up in something like that? I just do not understand. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm listening to the radio coming down the road. They say he may possibly be hooked into a double homicide from last year.
That's what I heard just a while ago on the sports thing, Bobby, on ESPN. I couldn't believe that.
This is you're right. That's what bothers me more than anything. You can't think stupid, and if you're stupid, that's one thing. But to be given all this God-given talent, and that's exactly what it is, and then to just throw it away, that aggravates hound out of me.
I shake my head. It's like I got some kind of palsy. I don't understand it. They're so blessed. They said when they took him out of that house, that's the last time he'll ever go back in it.
Jeez.
The Patriots have already cut him.
The Patriots don't play. But Jerry Jones kept him on.
Probably. But, I wonder if a lot of it is not, because of people like that grow up out of, they come from bad situations to begin with. But rather than look at it like, hey, I got all this money, here's my chance to just distance myself from that, if they don't feel pressure to, still have the same friends.
That's
and,
the thing,
family
like,
members
same,
and all that stuff, they're so worried about their street image. The last thing I would care about what the people in the street or my old neighborhood thought about me if I just signed a $40 million contract.
The only person I care what thought about me is the man signing that check.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Because, that's temporary at the longest.
Exactly.
They said the average career span of an NFL player is 4 years. That's the average, 3 to 4 years. They're not going to make it forever. The guy that goes 10, 12 years, he's the odd man. He's not the rule. And these guys just, I don't know.
No, you don't know. You can't figure it out, Bobby. You cannot figure it out.
No. There's no answer.
Did you see how cocky he was in court?
I haven't seen it.
It's like, so what?
I'm afraid he's going to find out his money's not going to get him out of this one.
Yeah, I'm afraid so.
Yeah.
His initials aren't OJ.
You was talking about worried about the guy that signs the check. I hope y'all don't lose me in the middle of this. Guy told me a joke the other day about a guy going home. He gets home a day early from work. It's about midnight, and he's in a cab, and he's going home, and he's telling the cab driver, he says, you know, he said, I think my wife is fooling around on me. He said, would you follow me in the house and serve as a witness? And the cab driver goes, well, you know, this could be a little bit dangerous. He said, but for $100, I'll go in with you. So the guy peels off $100 and gives to him, and they tiptoe into the house and dip into the bedroom, flip the light on, the guy reaches down, snatches the cover off, and there's his wife and this other fellow in the sack. Guy reaches in his pocket, pulls out a gun, puts it up against the guy's head, and pulls the hammer back, and the wife starts screaming, no, 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 no. Don't do it. I've been lying to you. Said, you know that new Corvette you're driving? I didn't inherit any money. He paid for it. Said, you know that new house we bought in the lake and the new boat we have? That ain't inherited money. He paid for that. I said, you know that country club and the new friends and the dues and things? He's paying for all of that. Guy takes the hammer off the gun, puts the gun by his side, and he looks at the cab driver, and he goes, well, he said, if you was in my shoes, he said, what would you do? Cab driver says, I think I'd reach down and get that blanket and cover his butt up so he didn't catch cold. So yes, you watch out for the man signing the checks.
I just, you know, those Patriots run a tight organization, man. They cut him. They arrested him a little before 9:10:30. He was gone.
Yeah, they fired him before they got him fingerprinted and booked.
Thank you.
Well, that's because they put the organization ahead of the individual stars, which is the way they should do.
I saw a list of players that have been arrested since the Super Bowl. Did you see that on the internet?
Oh, yeah.
49 players, yeah.
Jeez.
You know, it's
you know,
football.
It was the same thing in our business, though. We had guys that did, no, not murder, I guess, but we had guys that did stupid stuff. And the promoters, some of them were so afraid they were going to lose money, they wouldn't cut them loose. They just
put up
with it, covered it up, you know, and just... I personally don't think you help people like that in the long run.
You don't, Bobby.
And they get this feeling of entitlement and think they can get away with anything. And I'm not so sure that's not what happened here, but.
When you think about, you look at professional boxing, how many of those guys, you know, they came from, you know, nothing, and then, you know, they got all these big money fights, and look what happened to them. I mean, there's only a handful that you can name that had enough sense to hold on to their money and not go crazy. You know, you look at guys like Leon Spinks and Tyson, and this, I watched this fight the other night, and I'd never heard of either one of these guys, but it was a middleweight fight, and the guy that won it, you know, I can just see his path. You know, within 2 years, he'll be arrested for something, locked up or broke or whatever else. And it's sad to see, you know, people that have the opportunity that other people would die for, and they just throw it away. It's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Well, did you mention any of our losses at the beginning of the show, sir? Since I got in late.
What's that?
Did you mention any of our losses since I got in late?
No, not yet.
Oh,
I was going to talk about Jackie Foley in just a minute.
Okay.
If we lost somebody besides Foley.
I got an email. I don't even know if you know this or not. Maybe you do. I got an email yesterday. They had to amputate one of Gypsy Joe's, either his leg or his foot, yesterday.
No, I haven't heard that.
He's now in a nursing home up in Tennessee.
Good kid.
No.
Tough as he was, I wonder what they found to cut his foot off with.
Yeah. you know, me and Bo's talked about this. You know, he Paul Morton was 90 something when he died, and he told Bo Gypsy Joe was older than he was. And Joe don't know how old he is, so, you know, gotta be in his 90s.
I don't even think he knows what his real name is.
Oh, I'm sure.
He's useful. Oh, man. Yeah, but I was going to talk about Jackie Fargo. He fought a long, hard fight. Of course, he was our guest 2 years ago and probably did one of the best shows I think we've ever done. I don't know if you guys agree with me or not, but that was a great show, and I've never laughed so hard in all my life. I know he had a lot of his detractors, and a lot of the guys in the business didn't care for him all that much, but when you say the name or say the word legend, he certainly fit one of them, or fit that description. I just hate that I wasn't old enough to ever see he and Don work together in their prime. I've seen video of he, Don, and Sonny working six-man matches in Tennessee in the mid-70s, but I would love to have seen the fabulous Fargos in the late 50s, early 60s. Jerry, did Jackie ever even come through Georgia? I'm not even sure if the Fargos came through Georgia. I know Don was
not
there.
Not that I know of.
Solo.
Not that I know of.
Well, I know you were around Sonny when you were in the Carolinas, but he was a
wrestler. He wrestled in Atlanta. Don was in Atlanta a couple of different times in the 60s.
Yeah, I knew
that. Well, I think Jackie might have made some appearances in Atlanta, but he never came and stayed.
And he was also solo. I mean, the Fargos were big stars in the Northeast during their time as a team, but Jackie was also in the early 60s when they split, and Don went on to become Jack Dalton. Jackie, who was always connected with Jack Pfeffer managed him until, you know, and received a check from Jackie until the day he died. But Pfeffer was tied in with Tony Santos in New England, and they brought Jackie in there, and he was their world champion for a while, was a big draw up during that time, too. And he went into Chicago for Pfeffer in the 60s. So he was, most people associate him with Tennessee, but he was quite traveled. And, was definitely a legend, that's for sure. One of the best ever on the microphone. He could talk people into the arenas, and that's what it's all about. But I wish I could have seen he and Don together. I had the privilege of seeing Don and Johnny Fargo together, Greg Valentine, in the Mobile territory. They had about a 3-month run down there, together. But I never got a chance to see Jackie.
I never did understand people that, like Fargo, Jackie Fargo, that would change his name so many times instead of getting a name established. I never understood that.
Well, Jackie never was all that. Didn't change his name. When he started early, they used him as Dick Bishop. I don't know what they were trying to accomplish with that. And then when he went to Cuba, I mean, he was Honey Boy Fargo, and that's what he was when. He's, you know, when he became associated with Pfeffer, and Pfeffer took him into New York as Honey Boy Fargo, and it was Don that used so many gimmick names. Don.
That's
was,
what I'm talking to him. Yeah.
Yeah.
I never did understand that.
His personality. The thing was, as recognizable as Don Fargo was, he spent, you know, he was in Mobile in the late 50s, early 60s, several times, you know, for weeks at a time as Don Fargo, was very well known. He came back in 64 or 65 as Jack Dalton. Nobody had a clue who he was. He had changed that much. And then when he came back in 71, he was Don Fargo again, and he'd given up first the Daltons were the cowboy gimmick, and then by the time they left, because they were there, Lord, almost 5 years steady. By the time they left, they'd adopted the biker thing, which he'd went on into Indianapolis with, the biker gimmick. It got him in so much trouble. But then when he came back to Mobile, he was back to the bleach blonde, you know,
bodybuilder type, and he was back as Don Fargo. Nobody had a clue that that was Jack Dolphin. It was amazing. But I don't know. I don't know why he did that so much. I guess because he didn't want, when he and Jackie split, he was so associated with the Fabulous Fargos, that's why he took up the Dalton gimmick. So, I don't know. We lost Bobby for a minute. I'm sure he'll call us back when he gets inside and gets Debbie fed.
I'm sure. It was Jackie the only one this week?
As far as I know, yeah, as far as I know. Have not heard anything further on Dutch Savage. I know he was still in bad shape and was still in the hospital, but he's hanging in there. So,
have not heard anything. Was he having a stroke?
I believe it was a stroke. Yes. It's been so long since he's been in and out of the hospital. I've forgotten what it was, but I think it was a stroke. Yeah. But as of that, that's all I have heard about.
Well, I hate that about Gypsy Joe.
I do, too. It's long and hard as his life has been and as tough as he's been. You'd think he'd whip just
about anything. Where did he work, Mike?
Oh, let's see. He worked... he's most associated with Tennessee, of course, because that's where he got... made his biggest name, but he worked in West Virginia as Gene Madrid. He worked in Mobile as Joe Madrid. He worked in Tennessee. He was Gypsy Joe. He was, I don't think he ever used the Madrid name there, but he was worked a couple of mass gimmicks. I know he and Frank Martinez were the Blue Infernos. He worked up in around British Columbia as Gypsy Joe. I'm sure he was out in Texas at some point, but he's worked just about everywhere. He's worked in Japan.
I was in Japan with him one time.
Well, I'm sure he loved working with the Japanese because the Japanese were known to work so stiff, and he was always so stiff. I bet he had some hellacious matches over there with them.
Where was he from originally?
You know, I don't know. I don't know if he was actually from Mexico or what. I've always seen his real name as Gilberto Melendez, but Bo James has said that he's seen him with a different real name. He used the name Pepe Figueroa at one time. Who knows what his real name was, where he's from, or how old he is or anything.
He may not know any of that.
He probably doesn't. But he's something. You know, he was working still as of, you know, just last year. And if he's as old as Bobby says he is, that's amazing. He's got to be the oldest person that ever worked, beating Fez and the Sheik.
He's got to be up in his 70s.
Well, I mean, he would think so, because I would put him way older than that. I'd put him in at least his late 90s. I mean, I mean, he came into Mobile in 62 or 63, and he was probably approaching 40 then. And, I mean, I've seen his name and results under various different gimmick names back in the 50s.
No kidding.
Yeah, so you got to figure he's got to be in his late 80s, if not beyond that. And if Morton said he was older than him, because Paul Morton was 100 the first time I ever saw him in the early 70s. Or at least he looked like it. But what was he, 90? 293 when he died.
Gosh.
So, you know, that would put Gypsy, if that's actually true that he's older than Morton, then that I would put him in his mid 90s. I don't think he's that old though. I don't
either.
But 80s definitely. I would say he and Don Fargo are close to the same age.
How old is Fargo now?
Don is 85 or 86. Jackie would have been 83 yesterday. But he was 82 when he passed away, but he would have been 83 yesterday, and Don was older than him. Don served on Iwo Jima when he was 17, so what's that tell you?
Man.
Oh, man. Nothing like the Fargos.
Nope. And Sonny was one of the greatest guys.
Now, was he older or younger than Jackie?
I don't know. Have no idea.
I think he may have been.
Sonny was a funny guy. He was a great guy.
Did he ever? I know he periodically would wrestle for the Rockets. Did you ever see him work, Sonny?
Never saw him work. He would leave there and go to Memphis and team up with Jackie's Rough House and
yeah,
come back,
yeah.
You know.
Do you have your wife fed there, sir?
Yeah, I gave her the sandwich, so she let. I dangled the sandwich in the door, and she let me in the house. So.
Oh man.
Oh goodness.
Well, Jay was just asking me. I have not heard of anybody else that we've lost this week, other than Jackie. But,
I haven't heard of anybody else other than Gypsy Joe, you know, having to have his leg or foot amputated. And if Bo's listening, he might can click in and tell us more. But
I know personal friend has had some issues too. He's had another round of surgery as well that seems to be doing okay. He's having problems with his feet. I'm assuming his, I don't know if his is from diabetes, gout, or what it is, but he's having problems with his leg and feet as well.
But who is that?
Al Friend.
Al, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, I saw that too. See, he was going to be in ICU for a couple of days. So they put some stents in, try to get the blood flow going again.
Right. We're getting old, fellas, except Jerry. He's the bionic man now. He's been rebuilt.
I heard that.
I'm ready to go. Well, I'm going to tell you guys something. Sunday, I went. Raw was here, so I had a couple of guys that wanted to go. So, a guy that's a city marshal down at Tybee, my workout partner, they wanted to go. So, I said, all right, we'll go. So. They sold the place out. I'll give them credit for that.
Where they work at, Civic Center?
Yeah, sold it out.
Jeez.
So I go down there, and they said, I told them, I said, you know, we won't need a ticket. No, we get tickets. We won't need a ticket, I'm telling you. So I had emailed Jerry Briscoe, sent him a message, and asked him, was he going to be there? He said no, and sent him a message back. Was Arn going to be there? He said he thought Arn was going to be there. So we get there, and I go to the back door, and it was one of their security people. He said, are you with the event? Yes, sir. He said, you can go in that back door right there. Walk right in, shook the cop's hand. Another guy come up to me. He said, hey, how you doing? I'm doing fine. He said, can I help you? I said, yeah. I said, is Arn here? He said, no, Arn's not here. I'm thinking, I'm done. I said, who's the agent? He said, Dean Malenko. I said, I'd like to see Dean. He said, and what's your name? And I told him. He said, I'll be right back. He went and got him, and Dean come out, and we hugged each other. He said, when's the last time I saw you? I said, in Japan. So we talked a while about what was going on and this and this and this. And I said, look, Dean, I said, where do you want to sit? He said, wait right here. So he said, I'll be back in a minute. Come back in a minute. Give me 3 front row tickets. He said, then he told that guy, he said, don't put them on the front row. He said, they'll be throwing things. I said, no, I said, I may jump in the ring, but other than that, I said, we won't throw anything. But he treated me good. I hadn't seen him in a long time. You know, he's the only one on the whole card that I knew. Of course, he didn't work, but, I mean, he's the only one there I knew.
Really?
The matches were pretty good. I mean, you know, Cena was here, and the matches were pretty good, you know.
Well, you get those guys in a house show like that, some of them can work, you know, as long as they don't have to go over 20 minutes.
And that's about it. But they had a couple of young kids that could really go, and you know it is what it is, you know. And you sit and I look at things different than the regular fans sitting there looking, you know.
Yeah.
I'm looking and I'm thinking, my gosh, Bobby and Mike, they must have sold I don't know how much stuff. T-shirts, hats, wristbands. They had a thing set up over there to the side. Dean said, do me a favor. He handed me 2 comp tickets. I mean, 3 comp tickets. He said, would you do me a favor and go up to the front and get them scanned? I said, no problem. So I went up there and got them scanned. So when I went up, you have to go up the steps. And they had a thing set up over there where they were taking pictures with belts, you know.
Uh-huh.
They had all they were lined up. T-shirts were $35. I mean, they were selling. They'd sell enough to pay the rent.
You look at one of those T-shirts, see if it says Smith Novelty Company on it.
He wishes.
I didn't see any of that, sir. But you can't. They had boxes and boxes and boxes of stuff. I mean, they were selling programs for $10, selling them like hotcakes. But you know, when I had my gym, I had a pro shop there, and not only did you know you take money in off a person every month for their membership, but they left money with you every day for a protein shake or you know Gatorade or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
But these people sell so much stuff, guys. I wouldn't doubt they paid the rent. I mean,
oh, I'm sure the bulk of their money comes from that. I mean, I see people all the time ask why so-and-so is still on top after, you know, like Cena. And why is he? Because his act's gotten old and everybody's seen everything he can do and he's gotten stale. Because he's selling more T-shirts than everybody else. That's why.
That's it. I mean, and selling hats and just, I don't know what hats. Selling masks, Rey Mysterio masks. And just,
yeah.
I mean, it's just... Everybody has something in their hand, you know. That's the name of the game.
Well, my grandson is that's all he knows, and you know that's he grew up. It, you know, he's to be 12 this year. It's all he's ever seen. It's all he knows. So he's a fan. He's a huge fan. And they went to some pay per view they had here in Atlanta, he told me, he said, well, I've saved all my Christmas money and my birthday money and everything. He said, so that I can buy my stuff when I go to the whatever pay-per-view it was. And I said, well, how much have you got? How much you taking? He said, $200. I said, pardon me? He said, $200. And I said, what are you going to buy? He said, well, I don't know, just whatever I want. Lisa told me they were up here Father's Day weekend, and Lisa said that she was just curious. And don't you dare call them dolls. They're action figures. These little wrestling men. The kids got 303 of them. And I mean,
oh, he started his own territory, can't he?
He's a booker, son. You wouldn't believe. I'll sit here sometimes and listen to him, and he gets right in the bedroom. He entertains himself. He has these matches, and he commentates, and he just, I mean, it's all he knows. He is a huge fan, you know, and nobody directed him toward it. He found it on his own. It was just something he fell in love with. And, of course, I can't say nothing. I was the same way as a kid, you know, going to matches. If they'd have had all this stuff when I was a kid, I'd have wanted it too.
We both would have.
Yeah. And so, you know, as bad as I hate, that's all he's got to watch, and he'll never really know what we did. I just, like you say, it is what it is. And he's starting to get into monster trucks a little bit now, so I'm hoping it'll veer him another direction. But Yeah, he loves it.
But it's one heck of a production.
Jeez. In all the years I went to that stupid Civic Center, I only saw it sold out one time. And that was the night Rick Candy got married in the ring.
Oh, and another thing I couldn't believe. So, at intermission, my buddy, that's the marshal, he got up. He was going to get somebody a T-shirt. So he come back and he saw another guy. Three of us walked up front to get those tickets done. And some guy come up and asked him, he said, "That's Ric Flair with you, isn't it?" Talking about me. He said, "No, that's not Ric Flair."
You're only 2 feet taller than he is.
So anyhow, so he said, "Where are you guys sitting?" He said, "We're sitting right up from where y'all are sitting. There's a ringside, then there's a tier, like a mezzanine thing before it gets up to the..." He said, "How much are y'all's tickets?" He said, $45. But ours didn't have a price on it. So they had to have been 60.
Jeez.
They had to have been. I don't know. I don't know what they were. I'm thinking, my gosh. I forget what that thing hold. Bobby, 7,200?
Something like that.
Well, you figure what the average ticket was and multiply that by, let's just say, 6,000, 6,500. They had a heck of a house. They had a $180,000 house.
Yeah.
In Savannah.
And that's not including the gimmicks.
That's what I'm talking about. Make your head spin.
Well,
and then they would
ask you, Gary.
Sir.
Let me ask you, did you have even one inkling of wanting to jump in the ring and throw a flying head scissor?
I wanted to jump in the ring, but I never considered that. Not anymore. Those guys next to, I was sitting between them. They said, "You want to get up there so bad you can't stand it, don't you?" I said, "In all reality, yeah."
That's the thing, man. Your brain keeps telling you, "I can still do this, and I can do it better than they can do it." And then them old knees or them elbows will go, "No, you can't."
Sit down. Who are you
fooling? Who are you fooling?
But I don't think that'll ever leave you. I don't think that'll ever leave you.
No.
I don't think it'll ever leave you. But it was, all the stuff that's ever been said, I enjoyed it. Just being around it, I enjoyed it. He told me they're in 140 countries.
Wow.
He leaves tomorrow for Japan. That's an operation that you can't even fathom. And then that was Sunday. It started at 5. And then he told me the next night they went Mobile, Savannah, and Charleston. And Charleston, which was a live Raw show, of course, had different some of the same talent. I watched a little bit of it. First time I watched it in 3 years. And some of the talent, a lot of the talent was different. But it's an operation, I'll tell you that. It is, they got all the lighting and bring in their own ramps and had a big tractor trailer sitting out there and big bus. I shake my head. And these guys, I'm sure Bobby, the underneath guys are making more than the top guys in our day.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sure, yeah.
Of course, the cost of living's gigantic compared to what we did, but did y'all see on the internet about the thing about the Sheik?
No.
Missouri?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did see that.
Well, there again, that's almost like your Aaron Hernandez situation. A lot of that was self-inflicted.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A whole lot of it was.
Yeah. He made a lot of money. A lot of it went up his nose.
We were around a lot of people have made a lot of money, and you know, I feel like I'm as blessed or more blessed than probably half of them.
Yeah.
I don't have any
addictions,
you know, other than the wear and tear of what I did. You know, I can't blame anybody but myself because that's what I chose to do. But you know, my knees are doing great, and you know, I got some little shoulder problem here and there, and a little elbow problem. But I had that elbow operating on. Of course, they're never the same. But other than that, I mean, I'm happy. I'm happy. As far as I know, I'm healthy, and you know. But I'm like everybody else, just like the both of you. You do it again.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I do it again.
But then
you
think of the guys like Tommy Rich, like Atlas, that were on top. And think of the money that those two made. Just enjoy their role. Especially Tommy Rich. And look at him now. You know?
It's
hard for you to feel bad for people like that when, you know.
Well, it really is, Mike, because, you know, I mean, you just can't believe it. You can't believe it. I can't.
I mean, Buzz Sawyer. I can imagine Buzz Sawyer was broke the day he died. You know.
Yeah, and he was treated like a king in this territory.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
And Bobby, you know as well as I. Well, you was around when he was here, wasn't you?
Yeah.
You know, some mornings at TV, he didn't even know his name.
No, he didn't know where he's at.
Most
days was like that.
Last time I saw him, I was leaving one of the last TV shows I did there. He was sitting in the corner. He had one boot on. Had his trunks on, was barefooted on the other foot, and he was pulling what little bit of hair he had left and screaming at the top of his lungs. He had no clue where he was, who he was.
I might have been there that morning. I think I remember that.
he
Holy used him good. He made the kid money.
Holy claimed he didn't know he was doing drugs. How could you look at a situation like that, like I just described, and think he's not doing drugs? That's collective amnesia on Holy's part is what that was.
Either that, or I'd have had to call them in with the white jackets and the net to come get this boy.
But if you watched him work, you know, on TV with guys like me that were just there to you know, put him over, he'd kill him. I would.
Oh, I know. He
could not
ridiculous.
Protect himself, much less who you're in there with. He would just absolutely kill you. And, you know,
I don't know what his name was. I
well,
never saw the fascination with him.
Yeah, I mean,
he was a great worker early. Before all that, he started making money. I mean, he had a good look about him before he lost his hair and before they turned him heel. But Rich was almost as bad. He was always a skied up. You never knew where he was coming from. That was another one I probably, had they ever asked me, I wouldn't work with it.
Bobby made a statement a while ago, and people really overlook or neglect what Bobby said. It was like, okay, you can throw me some money, so I'll put up with all this madness.
Yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. but let's just say the three. Let's say Bobby and I are tag team partners, and Mike is our manager. And we draw money everywhere we go. But two of us out of the three are drug addicts or alcoholics. We show up buzzed up. May not, one of us may not show up, or all three show up drunk. What? You're not worth anything to me because I can't depend on you.
That's right.
That's my opinion.
You may hurt somebody that you work with. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, why would you want that aggravation? Because you might put a few extra butts in seats? I mean, what if all three of us don't show up? I'm sorry. I'd have had to make a believer out of him. You come work in my territory, You better leave all that stuff behind.
Yeah.
But I never saw anybody get on the people about having too much to drink before they get in the ring or too much to smoke or maybe you saw it, Bobby. I didn't.
I didn't either. Nah, it was you know. Ole's thing was Ole never drank, never used the stuff. He says, I didn't know they was messed up. He said, nobody ever told me. That was kind of what he says now. But I mean, you had to look at these guys and know something
Bobby,
wasn't right.
I didn't either, but I knew there was something wrong with his.
Yeah,
there
was something wasn't right.
I mean, I wasn't sitting there pulling my hair out and one boot on and
screaming.
Yeah. Come on, man. Come on, man.
Yeah, I'm not a doctor, but I can tell when a woman's pregnant.
Thank you. There you go. That's a good. That's the best analogy I've heard yet. That's probably the most intelligent thing you've ever said, Mike.
You know the example you gave there of the tag team. You know, I think about Bill Bowman and Joe Turner when they were saddled with Dr. Jerry. You know.
Yeah,
you know Bill and Joe. They were over. They had a lot of heat on them. They were making money, and then they saddled Dr. Jerry on them. And yes, they had a good run, and yes, they made some money. But you never knew when the guy was going to show up. You didn't know if he was if he could walk, talk, whatever, you know.
But see, I wouldn't want to be saddled with that.
Yeah,
and responsible for maybe hauling him. And
I don't think they would do either.
No, I could not. No, I don't know. You just, some things you can't understand. But
I told the story, I think I told it on the show here a couple weeks ago about Jim Wilson showing up in Columbus. They sent him over to that hotel and he didn't come back. And they sent a guy over after him. He was sitting over there reading the paper, forgot what he went over for.
You know, I don't know what all he was doing. I rode with him. He always had a Cadillac convertible.
Yeah.
I rode with him. This was early on. I'm talking about maybe 70, 71. I rode with him. That's the wildest man I've ever been around. I don't know what he was doing. What did he do all those years, Bobby, later on, you know, the last few years of his life? What was he doing?
Trying to sue somebody.
Yeah, him and Thunderbolt were trying.
I mean, that's the truth. He was just, you know, his claim to fame was Gunkel promised him that he was going to make him the world heavyweight champion.
Do you
Barnett,
believe that?
Barnett propositioned him. He turned it down and got blackballed. That's his whole claim to fame, which has as much truth to it as I'm the next NASA space shuttle captain. But you
well,
know,
if you are, I'm not going. But anyhow,
you've seen him work. I mean,
oh,
early in his career, when Gunkel was supposedly making him all them promises, please.
Well, you know, he was playing. He played with the Falcons and the Rams.
Yeah,
and you know, those guys back then would work in the off season. You know, he'd work in Florida. And
he went to University of Georgia too, didn't he, Bobby?
Yeah,
yes.
That's where he played.
He played football. So Georgia was where he was known. Well, here's a hard question for you. Who was better, Jim Wilson or Ron Michalowczyk?
Who?
Who?
Did one of you guys ever see Ron Michalowczyk?
I never heard of
him. He worked in Tennessee, but he reminds me of, he had hair, long hair, and it was always down his face, just like Jim Wilson, and they wrestled just about the same style. Like they could have made them a tag team, and they'd have been a fine tag team. Yeah, he was around in the late 70s. I don't remember who he played for, the Eagles or somebody like that, but he was another one that played, you know, the wrestling all season, I think.
Well, other than Wahoo. Now, Wahoo and Ernie Ladd are kind of exceptions to the rule. The best football player that worked in the offseason that I was ever around was Ron Pritchard.
Ron Pritchard, yeah.
He worked with Gunkel, you know, when we were in business those 2 years. Ron Pritchard was he was a heck of a little worker. As a matter of fact, they put the Georgia title on him, you know, for a couple of months.
But yeah, he got around quite a bit too.
He worked in Arizona, and he worked in Canada, and he worked worked in Detroit, besides all South.
But didn't they teamed him and Ladd together, didn't they, for a little bit?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they had Tommy Nobis as a special referee one time.
What's he doing now, Bobby? What's he done all these years?
Nobis runs a foundation here in Atlanta where. He tries, people donate cars and old cars and boats and stuff to him, and he turns it into, his foundation is to help underprivileged and handicapped adults get, train them to get jobs and stuff like that.
He was one heck of a football player.
He was a monster on the football field. Yeah, but he got all that pads off and you got close to him, he wasn't that big.
Oh, come on.
He wasn't that big. I mean, he just had a mean streak, man. He put that uniform on. He's crazy.
There was a lot of them like that. You think how many guys from other sports back in those days. There were rumors around when the Turner was going to have Bob Horner wrestle in the offseason. Baseball. He had the look. He looked like a miniature Dusty Rhodes. With his curly blonde hair.
Whatever happened to him?
After he went to Japan, and he was on a tear and was set to break the home run record over there, then the pitchers quit pitching to him because they didn't want him to break the record. I don't know what else he ever did.
Does he live up there, Bobby?
I don't know where he's at. I hadn't heard him mentioned in quite a few years.
I don't even know where he was from originally.
I know
Murphy lives in Salt Lake.
They're retiring.
Salt Lake City, Utah.
Who's that?
Dale Murphy.
He's back in Atlanta.
He's
working for the Fox Sports Network, doing some of the games and doing the post-game show, helping with it. But they're retiring Chipper Jones' jersey or his number tomorrow night. The game is sold out. They've got a few hundred standing room tickets they're going to sell tomorrow night, and they're telling people on the radio, if you don't have a parking pass, don't drive. Take MARTA. Traffic's going to be an absolute nightmare downtown tomorrow.
You know where he was born?
Who's that, Chipper?
Chipper, yeah.
Florida?
DeLand, Florida. You know what else is from DeLand, Florida?
Cole Brothers.
Cole Brothers Circus of the Stars.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he might be a silent partner in that thing.
I don't think so. Well, Jerry, we got a new act you can do instead of a cannon. We got a guy
what?
Who does handstands on this platform, and the platform raises up to the top of the tent with him doing handstands on it. Well, if you don't like that, you can walk the you can do the wire walk.
Did y'all see that man walk across that part of the Grand
Canyon? I watched that. Yeah, that was.
I did too.
Did you watch that, Bobby?
Yes, I did.
That's one record he don't ever have to worry about me fooling with.
No, sir. When he stepped off that thing and he had that camera on and it showed that shot straight down, it was over for me.
When they had that helicopter circling around. I
about
got
nauseated and
fell off the
sofa. I was the same way. He kept looking like he was getting closer to the end, and then they'd show another shot of him. He was still halfway out there.
Halfway, I think. Did you hear him tell his dad, don't give me the time?
Yeah.
He gave him, he said, you've been there on the wire 16 minutes. He said, don't give me any more time. I wouldn't want anybody talking to me.
Talking to me would have been interrupted my praying.
he
did do some serious praying coming across through there.
I can't imagine a man doing that.
I told Michael, I went back. They ran a little thing here there's a website here in Atlanta that shows. They show old pictures of things in Atlanta, and I was telling Michael or Charlie or somebody. I saw his great-grandfather, Carl Wallenda, walk across Atlanta Stadium. And I went back and looked. They showed a thing, and they did it in 1972. Yep. They stretched a wire across the top of that stadium, and he walked across it, and he stopped right in the middle and stood on his head on that wire.
Come on,
and
Bobby.
3 months
left. Yes, sir.
Hey, Jerry, here's the amazing thing. He was 76 years old when he did it.
Yeah.
Was you
and
there,
he,
Bobby?
Yeah, I saw him do that.
Three months later, he died.
In Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
Yep, in Puerto Rico.
Was that awesome, Bobby?
You know, it's just, you sit there, and it ain't like a circus. You know what a circus, you know, I mean, I don't know. You go to the circus, and you watch them do stuff, and especially, even if they're working without a net, you know, there's just something inside you that says, you know, they're not going to fall. This guy walking across the middle of that stadium, I'm watching that thing. And the thing is, the wire, it was, I forget how many, it was 300 feet up, and I forget how far across there it was he walked. But they didn't have any way. The wind was blowing. And they tried to talk him out of it. And he said, no, we just need to steady the wire. They ran cable and looped it around that wire about every 15, 20 feet and had the ground crew from the Braves, they were down there holding them wires, steadying that wire while he walked across.
Oh, come on.
Yes, sir. I mean, it's the craziest thing you ever seen. And, you know, the whole time he's doing it, you're thinking, well, just any minute, I'm going to watch this old man splat right there by second base. You know, he walked across Tallulah Gorge up there in North Georgia, too.
Yep, sure did. There's a plaque up there. That,
yeah.
Where he crossed.
Man, please.
Well, did you hear what the guy said the other night, what he wanted to do next?
No, I hadn't heard that.
He wants to stretch a wire off the Empire State Building to another skyscraper and walk across.
I don't know what he's making, but they ain't printing enough money for me to do no such stuff.
I don't think he's figured out to take out cars and shuttle buses and subway, you know, to take you between them buildings. That's crazy.
Are you serious?
Yeah. That's what he said. I mean, you know, did you see it when he walked across Niagara Falls?
I didn't see that one.
He walked across Niagara Falls. He's got me hooked. I'd buy a ticket. I mean, I watched him walk across Niagara Falls, and I've been to Niagara Falls. And I'm telling you, if you go on the Canadian side, you can walk up to the rail, and you're within 12 inches of where that thing is going over the side and going straight down. It will make you dizzy standing on concrete holding that rail watching it.
I believe that.
This boy stepped out and walked across them.
He was
harnessed on that one because the network, ABC or whoever the network was,
yeah, they made him
harness himself for that one in case he did fall.
Yeah.
Well, that's something he can have. I got no interest in that.
No, me neither. He don't have a lot of competition, I don't think.
You know, that's one thing, jumping something with a motorcycle. That's quick. He was out there 22 minutes and 54 seconds.
Yep.
It was a quarter of a mile.
With all that wind and dust blowing.
Did you see his shirt blowing?
Yeah.
Can you see my look? Like Mike said, when he was halfway, you thought he was through with it. He was just halfway. I'd have got a cramp somewhere. In my foot or something. No.
Or had to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, I would have, if I'd have stepped up on that wire, I'm sure I'd have went. Believe me.
Well, that, we can segue that right into a wrestling thing. That's like when they came up with the brilliant idea to have those scaffold matches.
I wouldn't have done that. Yeah.
Well, me neither.
I tell you that one of the most dangerous things I've seen is fooling with that ladder. You know,
yeah.
A ladder will run out from under you.
Uh-huh.
You can ask any of these painters that are in a nursing home about that.
Well.
Because I wouldn't land in the ring. I would land about five rows deep.
In somebody's lap. You know, Jack Donovan, you know, that's the way he got killed. He fell off he was a paint contractor. He fell off. He was in Phoenix City and didn't like the way one of his painters was doing something. He climbed up there. He was 76. He climbed up there to show him how to do it and fell off backwards.
Oh, yep. Come on.
Yes, sir. Yep. That happened.
At the ladder,
that happened the Saturday
the
after Thanksgiving about, I don't know, 7-8 years ago now, I guess.
Yeah.
Is that right?
I just seen him on Thanksgiving Day.
Yep.
Yeah, he had a platform scalpel with the ladder on top of that. And I guess that one of the wheels wasn't locked or whatever, and it rolled, and it threw him.
No, heights don't mix with me.
I'm a ground floor person myself.
I tell you something else I wouldn't do. I wouldn't work in one of these skyscrapers. I'm just telling you personally, I wouldn't.
Well, how about these window washers? I wouldn't be doing that.
I don't know what those boys make.
It ain't enough.
Or guys that work on the cables on the bridges like the San Francisco Bridge way up high.
I can't imagine that.
Me and Debbie went to San Francisco several years ago, and me and my daughter, we walked halfway across that thing. And walking across it, you can feel it sway.
Now, see, they had to come out there in the ambulance and get me.
Debbie had better sense. She sat there and waited on us. But me and Lisa walked across it. And you can actually feel it moving when you're walking across it.
Well,
and you know, they say they paint that thing 365 days a year. They're painting some portion of it every day because of the salt water and the rust and the corrosion and stuff. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I wouldn't even want to walk up. You know, they got them walkways that go, you know, all the way up by them cables to the top of them. I wouldn't even want to walk up them.
Bobby, there's no. If I look down, I'd be dead. You know, he said, they asked him, was he going to look down? He said, I'm not going to get out there and not look down. That's, you know, there's different strokes of different folks, but that's one stroke that didn't come my way.
Back about 1973, I guess, your brother-in-law, Mr. Steinborn, was promoting Warner Robins, Georgia, for Gunkel. And we went down there. I went down there. Dick had built three rings. They were great. His best bump ring I've ever been in. He built them. They were all wood. The only thing metal was the ropes and the under the cables under the ring and the corner post. Everything else was wood. And we went down there. He put a ring over there, and we went down there, and he was going to teach us how to put it together. And we did. We put it together. And then, well, he had a ring light he wanted to hang. And he said, come on, help me. And we went up. We went up in an elevator, and then we had to go up this little ladder. And they had a graded walkway up there. It's the top of this building. Now, this building was one story. We were probably, it might have been 40 feet in the air. It wasn't that far up. But the grading would run for 10, 12 feet, and then there'd be an opening, and you had to step across the opening to the next grate, and it was probably a 2.5-foot step. And I got to the first grate, and, of course, Dick went right across, and I got to the edge, and I said, I'll see you when you get back. And he said, come on. I said, uh-uh. He said, it ain't that far. I said, but it's 40 foot straight down if I miss.
You like me. Some people can't. They have phobias about that. I'm claustrophobic, too.
Mm. Well, you remember when Ron Garvin was on with us, he told the story of them being in North Bay and him climbing up in the rafters. And they had to call the fire department to get him down. It had gone on long enough that it had made the evening news, and people were still coming and buying tickets to see him up in the.
Well, that's what y'all could have done in Warner Robins. You could have froze and.
Yeah. Now, I know what would have happened if I'd froze up there the way our business was. They'd have found my carcass up there when somebody went up there to sleep or something.
Where's Bobby? I don't know. Last time I saw him, he's in the roof of that building in Warner Rock.
Goodness gracious.
No.
I just cannot imagine. It was weird enough watching Evel Knievel try and jump Snake River Canyon in a rocket.
Oh, geez, yeah. And pull the parachute before he got to the end of the ramp.
Yeah, that was a sham.
That was a fiasco.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you go to, you know, when we go to Vegas every year for Cauliflower Alley, looking at those fountains in front of Caesar, I can't imagine jumping them.
He can't either.
He tore that wall. I like to kill himself, but, I mean, it was just, there's no room. There's no room nowhere to get a run. I mean, he got the running start, but there wasn't nowhere to land. I mean, it wasn't over but a wall.
I guess his son, after seeing this boy do this cable thing, he'll come up with some other kind of jump. Robbie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's just what guys do. My kids walk on those wires. I just can't imagine that. I mean, I just...
The guys we have do it, they dance on them, do somersaults on them. And so we have one part where they're... They're walking out. Well, there's one guy on one end, one guy on the other end, and the guy on the one end's got two girls standing on his shoulders. And they get halfway out there, and one of the girls jumps off of the girl's shoulder and lands on the other guy's shoulders. And of course, our people are harnessed, but that wouldn't be a fun. They don't use a net, so I mean, there's all kind of things that can happen. I mean, Owen Hart was harnessed too.
Yeah, that's one of the saddest things I've ever heard. So sad.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. We just keep, you know, you keep pushing the envelope. Eventually, it's gonna bite you.
Yeah, sooner or later, something.
Yeah, it's gonna bite you.
Now this. You heard about the guys, you've been out in the country and seen those big power lines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, did you know they have guys go out there and clean those things? They go out there in helicopter and they lower them. I was talking to a guy that worked for the power company. He says they have to wear special kind of suits. They're humming. They're so hot, they hum. He said it'll make your hair stand straight up on your head, that electricity coming off that. Well, can you imagine doing that job? I don't know what they make, but you got to lower me down on a helicopter and them hot wires? I don't think so.
It ain't enough. I mean, it's tough to spend it when you're dead.
Our VP of operations was telling me that he's a former performer, and he was a daredevil. He did the wheel of death. He was a healing cannonball. He did the high wire act. He did trapeze. He did everything. He said when he was a young man, one of the cities he was in, they had one of those big, tall, I guess this was before the days of cell towers. It was a radio tower or whatever it was. It was right in the corner of the lot where the circus was playing, and the light bulb was out on it. The guy from the utility department came around and offered him $100 to climb up there and put a light bulb in. So he said he did it.
I would climb on the big thing too. It's amazing what people do for a living.
Well, Some of those people that would think nothing of doing that wouldn't get arrested for it either. Especially if Box Baker was in there with
them. What's they're taking your life in your own hands. How many circus performers is there of deaths? I mean,
well,
is it high or not high or?
Well, just in the Willenda family, the guy that walked the wire the other night, besides his great-grandfather who fell, he lost an uncle, too, somewhere that fell. There's been seven or eight from the Willenda family. And of course, the Willenda family goes back seven generations that have lost their lives during the High Wire Act. I'm sure there's a list somewhere.
Didn't a bunch of them die doing a human pyramid on a high wire one time? Because they always walked without a net.
Yeah,
they were doing like a human pyramid,
and that was their big thing. Their biggest stunt was the four-man pyramid. And I think that's how one of the uncles was killed, was doing that. They all fell.
Y'all have that thing that's got a big, it's round on one end or maybe two ends, and those guys run that thing and it goes around like a Ferris wheel?
Yeah, that's the wheel of death, yeah. Our human cannonball, Kayon, did that last year. It was the second act.
He would go outside, and he would go out of the perimeter of it.
Yep, and jumping rope and all that other stuff. And he would, the first time I saw him do it, he nearly slipped when he was jumping rope. Well, the next show he did the same thing, and I realized it was a work that he was doing that just to get the crowd's attention. But, yeah, we had that too.
That's the most dangerous looking thing I've ever seen. So they get that thing to moving, man.
Yep. It takes a lot of precision. I mean, but it's just like anything else. No matter how well you practice it, no matter how well you've got it down pat, there's always can be an accident. And you just never know.
Who makes
that's why our insurance is. Well, the gentleman I just mentioned, Elvin Bell, he built. He was one of the first to ever do that, and he built the one that we've got. In fact, he still owns. He owns that. He owns the cannonball.
What's his name?
The cannon. Elvin Bell. If you go on YouTube and look at him.
Did he used to work for Ringling?
Yes.
I remember the name.
He was the most famous daredevil outside of Evel Knievel. He was one of the very first ones to do hang on the trapeze by his heels as opposed to his feet. He would hang by his heels. But yeah, he was a very well known daredevil. He worked for Ringling for years.
I remember the name. I remember. Yeah.
Wonderful guy. He can tell you some stories, too. He was the one I said that paid him $100 when he was a kid to climb the right tower to change the light.
Jeez.
But he's on braces now, on leg braces. He has to use leg braces because he missed the overshot, I don't know if it was a net or if it was a big, one of the big inflatable things, but he overshot that in Singapore and had 6 months in Singapore hospital. I don't know which was worse, missing the hitting the floor of the wall or whatever he hit, or spending that much time in a Singapore hospital, which did the
you
most
mean
damage.
Coming out of the cannon? You talking about
yep.
the cannon? Well,
yep.
Counsel me out. I'm done. You shouldn't have brought that up.
Well, I told you we can do you on the handstand and you can go to on that platform to raise it up. It's neat, too. It flashes lights and all kind of stuff.
Yeah, Bobby, I'm going to try that.
Well, the best part of that is there's a beautiful girl that stands at the bottom of
I don't know who's at the bottom of it.
If she can't catch me, that ain't no deal. You know, you remember the, you know, we've talked about the guy that worked with Brody that day. You know, he was green, he got scared, and he held on to Brody and wouldn't turn loose.
Yep.
That'd be the way I'd be on that platform going up. I'd be hugging something going up, wouldn't turn loose.
You'd pass that chick going 74 miles an hour.
Listen, no. My wife is afraid of heights, and I talked her on to getting onto the sky lift at Stone Mountain one time, and then, you know, it's a big car you stand in, and in the middle of it there's a bar. And when she got on there, she hugged that bar like it was her best long-lost friend. And I told
her, my wife did the same thing.
I said, you realize if this car falls, that bar is going to fall too. She said, just leave me alone.
I thought you meant a drinking bar. That's what I'd have been.
Now, my ex-wife used to do the same thing at Stone Mountain, and we used to for our anniversary every year. And then when after our daughter was born, we would take her the last weekend before school started. We would go eat at the Sundial. My ex-wife would ride that outside elevator. She would put her nose on the inside wall.
That's where I'd have been. I'd have been right beside her.
I had to go to when I was umpiring, I went to a national umpire school in Nashville, and we stayed at the school was being held at the Holiday Inn downtown across the street from the state capitol. And it's about a 25-story building, and it's built on a square, and all the rooms are on the outside wall, and in the middle is a 24, 25-foot atrium. And we were on the 18th floor. And we got off that elevator, and my wife looked like one of them cartoon characters or a detective trying to slip up on somebody. She got all the way up against the wall, and she just slithered all the way around the hall till we got to our room. She never would get up very close to, walk down the hall. She stayed up against the wall where she didn't have blood.
I don't like stuff like that either. I do anything go wrong, man.
You'd love the Stratosphere in Las Vegas. It's about 1,200 foot tall, and they got a roller coaster on top of it.
I guess you got on that.
No, sir. No, sir. I ain't never been to the top of it. I ain't going up there. I ain't lost nothing up there, and don't expect to find that.
Heights don't bother me as long as, but when you're up, like Jerry was talking about those skyscrapers, you're up there and that wind's blowing, and you can feel the building moving. That's okay.
I could not do that. I couldn't.
I'm that way with pain. I have a high threshold of pain, as long as it's somebody else hurting. if it's me, I want morphine or something.
Jeez. Oh, man. Were we even talked about wrestling this show?
I don't know. I tried to go to the scaffold match, and we went south again. But we're talking about those getting back at the scaffold match. Everybody talks about, I think Ricky Morton and Bobby Eaton were one of the first people to ever, have those scaffold matches up around Memphis. And everybody talks about how great they were. And Bobby Eaton says worst matches they ever had because they were scared to death.
How is he doing?
Last I heard, he was at home, but they were talking about putting a pacemaker in or something. I think his heart's giving him some problems.
Wow. That's a shame. Actually, I think the very first scalpel match was in Memphis or somewhere, and it was back during Steel Gulas days. It was Jarrett and the owner, Al Green, one of the Greens. And whichever one of the Green brothers it was fell and broke his wrist. And actually, I've never heard of anybody that had one that didn't get hurt. And that's just, I'm all for putting on a good show and selling, but.
Well, I know Rocket told me, Rocket said he wouldn't get on one on a bet.
I wouldn't either.
That's crazy. We would put the, we came up, or they did the deal where we would put the manager in the cage, and we'd suspend him over the ring. That always scared me to death because I was the one always responsible for putting the cage together, and I was I was responsible for putting it together, and I was also responsible for getting the block and tackle hung. and the worst one I ever seen. We did it in Augusta at Bell. And they hung that thing up in the ceiling, but somebody, I forget, it might have been Gary Hart, or it might have been Rock Hunter, I can't remember, but whoever was in the ring reached over and grabbed that cage and pushed it and started it swinging. And when we started swinging, that block and tackle at the top of her started going back and forth and hitting that ceiling, and sheetrock started falling. And crap, first thing I thought of was, this thing's fixing to come down. And when it comes down, not only is it going to hurt whoever's in it, it's going to land on somebody and kill them.
Well, sure it would have.
I always was very leery of that thing. Most places we went, if it was a building of any size, they were union, and you had to get an actual person that would go hang it. But it was kind of scary.
Yeah, I'm just
can't imagine that some of the gimmicks that they come up with. That's like when, did Blassie ever do cage matches in Atlanta? I know he was well known for them in Los Angeles.
Blassie and Galento were the first people I ever seen work with barbed wire around the ring. No cage, just barbed wire.
I can't imagine.
I wouldn't have done that either.
Not without a weed eater, anyway, right?
Yeah, really. I've never looked at that again since Bo sent me that. I've never looked at it again.
Huh.
I appreciate the effort, but I...
Oh, man. Well, guys, I'm going to end it early tonight because I've got to get up and put tickets together and put my tickets on sale tomorrow. So,
are you on Long Island, sir?
I am on Long Island. I am in Medford, Long Island, or Medford, New York, which is on Long Island. And my two towns are Center Marichis and Farmingville. We're
okay.
Doing nine towns on Long Island. And
so
luckily,
is the whole crew on Long Island?
Not yet. So far, Randy Hales is here. I'm here. Tom Ernesto is here. And that's it. The rest are in Connecticut, and one of the guys is in Metro or the Hudson Valley area of New York. They're only going to bring two others over. I think there's only going to be five of us doing them. A couple of us have two towns apiece, and the rest of us have one town.
Is Juanita and Brian on Long Island?
Yes, they are. In fact, I
had that's scary. I need to get a hold of somebody up there with some kind of security detail. They don't know what's in their midst.
Well, they found out quick. They've been here a couple of weeks already, and they're going to be here a couple more weeks. I was telling Jared before you got on with us, I'm going to be here 5 weeks.
Jeez.
And I'm going to be ready to head south by the time I get done.
I know you are.
But we will see. We will see. But I hope our shows in Long Island did okay. Small crowds, but enthusiastic. But we had so much to compete with between the boat races, and there was another circus not too terribly far from us. There was a state fair right up the road from us, or a county fair, whatever it was. And, Newport, Rhode Island is a tourist destination anyway, and we didn't draw great crowds. We drew okay crowds, but a couple of bad crowds. But they were very enthusiastic, and they enjoyed us having there. They had a beautiful lot, and the area up there was beautiful and everything. I just wish we had done better, and hopefully we'll go back there at some point when we don't have so much to be competing with. We'll just have to look at what their calendar of events are and get ourselves in there where we're the sole attraction. And I think we'll do well there. I hope to do well here. The only thing about having so many towns in one place, you tend to burn people out. And we're sharing so much advertising and everything. It's just, but we generally do well okay here. So I'm looking forward to it.
Well, good. When is your shows?
I've got it on the 15th, 16th, and 17th. And then again on the 26th, 27th, and 28th.
Okay.
Mike, did you stay there when the shows actually start up?
Yeah, I stay here through the shows. In fact, I'm usually around after the shows because when the shows leave, whatever lot we've been on, I usually meet whoever and go over the lot again, make sure no damage has been done or anything like that other than the holes that we dig. And usually I have somebody come in to replace, patch asphalt or, we fill in the holes with sand or on a grass
right.
Plot. So, but you guys will enjoy this. I got up Monday morning, packed my car and everything, and my goal was I was going to make a couple of stops around 9 o'clock and then drive over to Newport and meet the guy on the lot at 10 o'clock. Well, about 8:45, my car won't crank. So, I had no clue what was wrong with it. It did this one time before back in February. It wouldn't crank, and I let it sit for 3 days, and it cranked right up, and I hadn't had another problem with it. Well, it did the same thing this time. So I'm already packed, checked out, and everything.
And I went to the girl at the desk. I said, do you think your maintenance guy's got some jumper cables or something? She said, well, we've got this here. She handed me one of those little small jump boxes that probably hadn't been plugged in a year. So it had very little charge on it. Well, 2 hours later, it's still not charging my car enough to crank. So this guy pulled in the parking lot in a work truck, and I stopped him, and I said, I bet you got jumper cables. He said, yes, sir, I do. So he jumped me off, and there we go. So I was 2 hours late. I finally met the guy at 11 o'clock, and then I thought, well, if this will still work out, I'll go ahead and head down there, and I'll get, because it's only a 3.5-hour drive. 6 hours later, I finally get to the hotel. It took me an hour and 10 minutes to go 4 stops through Stamford, Connecticut. It was bumper to bumper all the way.
It's all them a people going for them tours at Titan Sports.
I guess. But it was, there was no road construction, no wreck, no, 4 lanes wide, bumper to bumper for an hour and a half. That's like, imagine going, Bobby, for you, going from the Jonesboro exit to the McDonough exit. It's taken an hour and a half.
I couldn't move.
I get into New York and the Long Island Freeway, because now I've hit 5 o'clock traffic. It was the same way. So next time I'm taking the ferry if I'm up, because that's only $58 a circle for repayment. It's an hour and a half boat ride. So, so that's what I'm going to do next time.
Hmm. Well, are we going to do a show next week?
Yeah, as far as I know, unless you got something going on.
Well, I'm just wondering. It was 4th of July. I didn't know if you guys, you know, you guys might be picnicking or something.
Well, that's up to you guys.
I mean, I'm available. I have nothing going on.
You know, I may not, because last year, 4th of July, Tom Ernesto ended up working some concert they were having. And I've got his towns this year, the towns he had last year. So why don't we just not plan one next week, and we'll come back in 2 weeks.
Okay.
That sounds good. That sounds good.
All right.
All right. That way you Gary can be down on Hobby Island. All right, you too. All right, guys. Well, we'll see you guys in a couple
weeks. We'll get together in 2 weeks.
Sounds good, guys.
All right. Good night.
Good night, guys.
Good night, everybody. All right, bye-bye.
We thank you for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.